My last guest this week is Frank Holmes, CEO and Chief Investment Officer of U.S. Global Investors. They're behind an ETF getting a lot of attention right now, the U.S. Global Jets ETF, ticker symbol JETS, Jets. This now has around $600 million invested in it, and obviously the airline industry has been front and center during the coronavirus crisis. Frank is now on the line with me from San Antonio. Frank, always a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time.
It's great to be with you.
So, Frank, so many questions I have. You know, it's remarkable. Assets in Jets went from around $35 million at the beginning of March to about $600 million now. That's 2 months. And I saw a Bloomberg note that this ETF has taken in money now for 49 straight days. Bloomberg's Eric Balchunas pointed that out. I guess first, let's set the table, and then I do want to come back to these flows. For investors who aren't familiar with Jets, just take us through the basics in terms of what it holds, how the holdings are weighted, anything else you see noteworthy.
Sure. Just to help everyone understand the concept was that I noticed that we're called U.S. Global Investors, and my options in flying had dropped by 30%, and the cost of my tickets went up 300%. So I got a little frustrated, and I said, I've got to also get into the ETF industry and launch some products. So I went out and did research and tried to recoup all my travel costs. I launched Jets ETF. And, you know, it went sideways for 5 years. We quickly got it up to 100, then it was down to 50 and back up. But it went sideways. 3 years ago, Buffett came in and started buying the airlines again. When I first launched it, he didn't like the airlines. And he changed, and I said he would change because the airline industry has the capacity to generate huge cash flow returns on invested capital when this economy is chugging along. And so that was sort of the creation of it, the concept. And the other part was creating a what they call a smart beta 2. That is, we did a lot of data mining, and we spent thousands of hours. And what we created was that we've noticed is that Southwest Airlines, Delta, United, and American Airlines have the survivors of all these mergers during the bankruptcy years, which started 15 years ago. And as they came out of this bankruptcy and after 2008-9, you saw a change. And you, all of a sudden you saw prices of tickets going up, options to fly drop, and they would start charging these ancillary fees. So we noticed that those four big titans basically are 80% of the travel in America. And so we create the ETF that four names are 12% each, and they rebalance each quarter, because there's a real different set of competition factors between them, and they all have unique models. But we did note that they have a moat around their business. And so with that, we then said, how do we create other airlines and deal with global volatility? So we basically, like a pro sports, used our benchmark was a New York Stock Exchange Global Airline Index, and said, what factors do we need and what allocation do we need that could beat it on a consistent basis, like 80% of the time? And after thousands of hours of backtesting and figuring it out, we launched it, and that's what it's done. So it has 20 names at 1% each, which are foreign. It has a total of 33 names. Four are 48%. So it's an interesting concept that 80% of the holdings are U.S. holdings, but 70% of the names are foreign. And that really helped mitigate currency volatility looking back over 12 years of data.
Okay, Frank, so in terms of what's been going on in the airline industry, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, right? We've had a global economic shutdown because of the coronavirus. I've seen air traffic has plummeted, 90-95%. Airlines are really just burning cash right now. And then also, you mentioned Warren Buffett a little over a week ago, a story that made a lot of headlines. We learned that Berkshire Hathaway had divested their entire position in the big airline stocks. And so from the outside looking in, this doesn't look great, right? I think we would all agree it's going to be a while before airlines return to the level they were operating at previously. However, I did see that you recently said this could be a once-in-a-generation buying opportunity. So the question I have for you is, why is that? Walk us through the overall investment case here for airlines.
So it's a jump ball, and is it going to be a V-shaped recovery or a U-shape? The Bears say it's an L or a Nike swoosh, but I think it's going to be much more of a U-shaped recovery. And so what has happened in previous cycles? So if you go back to tech bubble, September 9/11 crisis, which the airlines actually all shut down, you had SARS in Asia, what happened, and you had the 2008-9 crisis. What's fundamentally different and what's been learned, basically the regulatory bodies and politicians have learned, you have to support the airline industry to turn the economy around. One in 15 jobs are airlines related. So this is unprecedented support with the CARES Act for this industry. And in fact, today the Feds are coming in and the Federal Reserve and buying ETFs in corporate bonds, because corporate bond yields have gotten way, way above what the 10-year government bond is. And so they have to create liquidity into the system. So I think there's unprecedented support that lends it that we're not going to get this L-shaped type of recovery. And so what happens in previous cycles is that they fall 50 to 60, actually 70%, these stocks, the airline industry, and then they rebound between 80 and 150% over 8 to 15 months. So there's a huge bet in this particular industry that, A, you've got government support and sponsorship, that this industry has the potential to double over the next 12 months. And I think that that's the big interest, and it's the only ETF that really covers and focuses on the airline industry. Now, as for Buffett, we must remember, this incredible maven, this incredible brilliant mind, he is 90 years old this year, and he is totally risk-averse. And you're seeing that he's not making investments, and he's actually been piling cash. And the thought process from bankers is that he's going to just take out Southwest Airlines when it turns, or one of the domestic airlines, because he's talked about it a couple years back. And so I think that he's got his powder dry. He's very, very cautious, wants to see how the economy as a whole. Whereas in 2008, he was much faster jumping back into the market. After 9/11, he was much faster jumping back into the market. He's not in this period.
Frank, with the government support you mentioned that the airlines are taking, does that do anything to diminish the upside longer term?
No, I don't think, you know, interesting, when you look at the TARP program, the government made a ton of money on that TARP program. And so I think, as Buffett said in his annual meeting, is that you've got to bet on American ingenuity and American innovative and that invisible hand of Adam Smith. It just makes a comeback, and it'll be different. It won't be exactly the same, but the ability to rebound, it's bet on America. And I think that that's what I'm betting on. Now, coming back on the structure of our ETF, I share over a year ago we kicked out Boeing. It didn't meet the quant model. And every quarter we rebalance this portfolio, and stocks go in and out based on, are they the most attractive on cash flow returns on invested capital, and other sort of five key factors we found are best looking at this industry.
Something I've been thinking a lot about as well, and it, from both an investment standpoint, but also from a personal standpoint, is what happens to ticket costs and ancillary fees. And I wonder if we'll see some upward pressure here. And the reason why, let me just lay this out. We know airlines are taking a lot of precautions to ensure the safety of passengers, doing a lot more cleaning, right? There's cost involved with that, potentially not having middle seats occupied, so you don't have those paying passengers. And I just wonder if all of that will ultimately manifest itself with increased ticket cost and higher costs on things like baggage fees and, I don't know, Wi-Fi, seat upgrades. How do you see pricing evolving?
I don't see that until a year out from now. I think they're going to do everything to make you feel safe to fly again. There's been so many lessons learned after 9/11 and the TSA and their issues and problems they had. If you recall, little old ladies in wheelchairs and infants have to be screened, and it was just took almost a decade before they had pre-check and fast-checking you through the process. They're much more focused on that. I think you're going to see temperatures being taken, and they'll refund your ticket. You know, if you shouldn't be flying, because it's not just to protect other passengers; it's to protect the attendants and the pilots. So I think it's just, these are new precautions. They can do it all electronically. In fact, at US Global, we have one of those infrared thermometers. Hmm. And it's really fast and easy to take the temperature of an employee. And it's free for them to use if they want to double check. So I think if we're going to change. I know in San Antonio, the nurseries are all won't let parents come in with their kid without taking the temperature of the parents and the kid.
What about
as a precaution?
When we talk about costs, what about the falling price of oil? I think that could potentially be a positive driver. Do you agree with that?
Totally agree with that. And I don't think oil prices are going to go into la-la-la again. And remember, the frackers are incredible innovators. In San Antonio, it's a huge fracking community just south of San Antonio. And so my dearest friends are pioneers in this industry. So I think that oil prices are going to be lower. It was always their biggest cost, and then it dropped. You know, the salaries became the biggest, and one of the best parts was the ancillary fees. If you go back 10 years ago, globally, they were like $5 billion, and prior to the coronavirus, they were hitting $100 billion. They make a ton of money off Amex for Delta and Visa and MasterCard. Billions and billions of dollars is made by these airlines from these ancillary fees, in addition to what aggravates you and I are the baggage fees and change fees, etc. But Eric was telling me, I was chatting with Eric this morning, and he was telling me he's flying to the panhandle of Florida with his son to see his father's in his 70s. And, you know, he saw the flight tickets are one-third the cost. So it just sort of, I think that we're going to see that things are going to be very, very competitive in pricing. And what's interesting for me to see is how things have changed is what people look at today. The sentiment, the quant funds that trade Jets ETF and the airlines around it, you're seeing that they're looking at Google Trends. And Google Trends in Asia has shown a big rebound where people are looking for hotels, looking for tourists for holidays, South Korea, Vietnam, China, Japan. There's been a big pickup. And we're starting to see that in the U.S. And the other one is the TSA publishes now every day how many people they search as you go through those airports and the 400 airports. And what I thought was really interesting was it's doubled since April the 14th. So it's bottomed, and now we have to deal with a few companies are going to have some debt problems and leasing that United had on Sunday. But the real issues are companies like Avianca, the biggest in Latin America. It went bankrupt. The Colombian government wouldn't sponsor it because when it last time it had a bankruptcy, they repositioned the company in Panama, and so there's no corporate taxes, so the government refused to support it, and it's gone to Chapter 11. But all these airlines, We were flying them when they were 85% were in Chapter 11 10 years ago.
It's amazing.
So, yeah, it's a really key component of the economy. So I think that for those who are really keen on looking at it, they want to look at the TSA. It's easy to get the data points. And Eric was saying that Robinhood, it was interesting for us, is that the beginning came in hedge funds, and then quant funds came in sort of looking at the bounce at previous cycles, and then Robinhood investors came in. And he said something like 20,000 Robinhood retail investors came in buying Jets.
I saw that. Well, Frank, just a couple minutes left. Let's talk more about that, because we have now seen, what, over $650 million into Jets this year. I guess, are you surprised by that? And what does it say to you that investors are looking to this ETF to play a rebound in the airline industry?
Well, I think it's a great statement. People can't wait to fly. It's always... I think there's a pent-up demand to be able to fly. But I think that what Eric was telling me, that, you know, the average ETF that doesn't grow through $100 million only lasts 3 years. And we waited 5 years for this. So we're very patient, and we have a low-cost structure to be able to survive through that long drought because it was the only product. And it's like hack. You know, hack took off when Sony got hacked.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier, yeah.
And so the same thing is here. It's the first time, though, that something has fallen, but it's attracted deep value investors. It's attracted traders. It's attracted those that believe that you have to have the airlines if you want to bet on the economy. It'll be the first mover advantage will be the airline industry.
Frank, just 2 minutes left. I want to switch gears here quickly and ask you about gold, just because we covered this topic earlier in the show, and I know U.S. Global has a long history in the gold market. So the other ETF you offer is actually a gold miner ETF, the U.S. Global Go Gold and Precious Metal Miners ETF, ticker symbol GOAU, G-O-A-U. And, you know, you look at the top performing asset classes, especially over the past 12 months, gold's right there. Any quick thoughts on gold moving forward?
Sure. Well, first of all, GOAU is a quant-driven. I learned a lot from Jets, and it's unique. It has three royalty companies, or 30%, like the four Jets that are major airlines in Jets, and they rebalance each quarter. And then it has another set of 25 names that are really driven on who has the highest cash flow, revenue per share growth, and cash flow per share growth, and cash flow returns on invested capital. So it is very dynamic and recalibrating every quarter. And it's outperformed when, before we launched at the GDXJ going back a decade, 92% of the time in rolling 12-month periods. So from that end, I wanted to have a product that was, that I see quants are very significant in driving stock prices today. And with that, gold is just, it's an amazing to see the Congress is now pushing for another $2 trillion. It's unprecedented. And what's happened since 2008, 2009 is the G20 finance ministers and central bankers have become a cartel. It's synchronization, taxation, and regulation. Now it's synchronized growth, money printing. They don't compete with each other as much as they try to synchronize. So they can all print money, and in any time that's happened where you get negative zero interest rates, that is, whatever the government's trying to ask you to buy their bonds, take away the CPI number. If that's a negative number, gold will go up in that country's currency. And all the G20 countries have negative real rates of return. It looks like it's going to last for a couple of years, and they're printing money at an exponential rate. So anytime that's happened, precious metals become a very important alternative asset class. But what shocks people the most, this century, in the past 20 years, 16 of the 20 years, gold has been positive and has outperformed the S&P bullion as 2-1. Now, gold stocks had great performance. They failed, too many dumb acquisitions, etc. But today, they have free cash flow. Very disciplined executives. And what's happened is that the S&P's free cash flow has fallen away with this crisis, but the gold stocks have not, and they're rising. So you're seeing the journalists all of a sudden coming in to buy these gold stocks that have free cash flow yields. Newmont has a free cash flow. Barrick has a free cash flow. And if you look at those stocks that have revenue per share growth and book value rising, they've far outperformed other classes. And the royalty companies have far outperformed Berkshire Hathaway for the past decade.
And Frank, in terms of owning gold miners, do you see that as a replacement for, let's say, a physical gold ETF? Is it a complement? How does that fit in a portfolio?
I think it's a complement. You know, I think it's 10%. I always call the 10% golden rule, rebalance every quarter or once a year, 5% into bullion or beautiful 24-karat gold jewelry, and then the other 5% to gold equities. And I'm biased because I've really put a lot of work and effort into GOAU, and I think that that is a way to play the gold stocks.
Well, Frank, we'll have to leave it there. Going back to the Jets ETF, just an amazing story. We'll be really fascinated to watch that moving forward. But I appreciate your time this week. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. And safe travels.
Appreciate that. That was Frank Holmes, CEO and Chief Investment Officer of U.S. Global Investors.